Chapter 18. Butcher was packing his things. The others were standing around him.
So you actually found her? Graber asked.
Yes, but
where?
On the street, Butcher said. She was simply standing on the corner of Kellerstrasse and Bierstrasse, where the umbrella store used to be.
In the first second, I didn't even recognize her.
Where had she been all this time?
In a camp near Erfurt.
But listen, so she's standing there by the umbrella store, and I don't see her. I walk past, and she calls after me. Otto, don't you know me?
Butcher paused and looked around the barrack stay room.
But how are you expected to recognize a woman, comrades, when she has taken off 80 pounds?
What's the name of the camp where she was?
I don't know. Forest Camp 2, I think. I can ask her. But just listen now. So I start at her and say, Alma, you?
I, she says.
Otto, I had a sort of presentiment that you were on furlough. That's why I came back. I go on staring at her. A woman that used to be as husky as a brewer's horse stands there, emaciated, only 110 pounds instead of almost 200, a skeleton, her clothes hanging, a beanpole.
Butcher snorted.
How tall is she?
Feltmon asked, interested.
What?
How tall is your wife?
About 5'3". Why?
Then she's average weight now.
Average weight? But man, what kind of nonsense is that?
Butcher stared at Feltmon.
Not for me. As far as I am concerned, she's a wisp. What does your damned average weight matter to me? I want to have my wife back the way she was. Buxom, with an ass you could crack nuts on and not with a sorry coffee bean instead. What am I fighting for? For something like that?
You're fighting for our beloved Fuhrer and for our dear fatherland, not for your wife's dead weight, Reuters said. You ought slowly to have found that out after 3 years at the front.
Dead weight? Who's talking about dead weight?
Butcher looked from one to the other in anger and helplessness.
Live weight is what it was, and you can take all the rest and—
Stop,
Reuter lifted his hand in warning.
Think what you like, but don't say it. And be happy your wife is alive.
I am, of course. But can't she be alive and as buxom as she used to be?
But, Butcher, Feltmon said, after all, you can feed her up again.
Really? And with what?
With the little bit you can get for ration coupons? Try and see what you can get the back way.
It's easy for you to talk, you and your good advice,
Butcher exclaimed bitterly.
I only have 3 days for a low left. How am I to feed up my wife in 3 days? Even if she bathes in cod liver oil and eats 7 meals a day, she can't gain more than a couple of pounds at most. And what does that amount to? Comrades, I am in a dreadful situation.
Why? After all, you still have the plump proprietress for fat, if that's what matters.
That's just it. I thought if my wife came back, I wouldn't so much as give a passing thought to the proprietress. I am a family man and not a chaser. And now the proprietress pleases me more.
You're just a damned superficial character, Reuter said.
I am not superficial. With me, everything goes too deep. That's my failing. Otherwise, I could be perfectly satisfied. That's something you don't understand, you jokers.
Butcher went to his locker and threw the last of his things into his knapsack.
Do you know where you and your wife will stay? Graber asked. Or do you still have your old apartment?
Of course not. Bombed out. But I would rather live in a cellar in the ruins than spend another day here. The calamity is simply that my wife no longer pleases me. Of course I still love her. That's why I married her. But she simply no longer pleases me the way she is. There's just nothing at all I can do about it. What am I supposed to do? She feels it too, of course.
How much more furlough have you?
3 days.
Couldn't you pretend just for that bit of time?
Comrade,
Butcher said calmly.
In bed, maybe a woman can pretend. Not a man. Believe me, it would have been better if I had gone off without finding her. As it is, we simply torment each other.
He picked up his things and left. Reuter looked after him. Then he turned to Graber.
And you? What are your plans?
I'm going to the commissary. Just as a precaution, I'm going to ask again whether I need any more papers.
Reuter grinned.
Your friend Butcher's bad luck hasn't scared you off, eh?
No. It's an entirely different kind of thing that scares me.
Heavy weather, said the clerk at the commissary. There's heavy weather at the front. Do you know what you're supposed to do in heavy weather?
Take cover, Graber replied. Any child knows that. But what has that to do with me? I'm on furlough.
You think you're still on furlough,
the clerk corrected him.
What's it worth to you if I show you an order that arrived today?
That depends. Graber took a package of cigarettes out of his pocket and laid it on the table. He felt his stomach contracting.
Heavy weather, the clerk repeated. Severe losses. Replacements required instantly. Men on furlough who have no urgent reason for staying are to be sent back immediately. Get it?
Yes. What are urgent reasons?
Death in the family, settling important family business, serious illness.
The clerk reached for the cigarettes.
So disappear. Make yourself invisible. If they can't find you, they can't send you back. Avoid the barracks like the plague. Crawl in some place until your furlough is over, then report for duty. What can happen to you then? Punishment for failure to report a change of address? You're going back to the front anyway. Basta.
I'm getting married, Graber said. Is that a reason?
You're getting married?
Yes, that's why I'm here. I wanted to know whether I needed any papers beside my paybook.
Marriage! Perhaps that is a reason. Perhaps, I say.
The clerk lit one of the cigarettes.
It could be a reason, but why take a chance? You as a frontline hog don't need extra papers. And if you do need some, come to me. I will arrange it for you on the quiet so that no one gets a whiff of it. Have you a decent outfit? After all, you can't get married in those rags.
Can I make any sort of trade here?
Go to the sarge in charge of supplies, the clerk said. Explain to him that you are getting married. Say I sent you. Have you still a few good cigarettes?
No, but perhaps I can get hold of another pack.
Not for me, for the sarge.
I'll see. Do you know whether in a war marriage the woman has to have any special papers?
No idea, but I think not, since it has to be done fast.
The clerk looked at his watch.
Go right over to the supply department. The sarge is there now.
Graber went to the wing where the supply department was. It was in the attic. The sergeant major was fat, and his eyes were different colors. One was of an unnatural, almost violet blue. The other was light brown.
Don't stare at me, he snapped. Haven't you ever seen a glass eye before?
Sure, but never one that was so different in color.
This isn't mine, you idiot.
The sergeant major tapped the beaming blue eye.
I borrowed it from a friend. Mine fell out on the floor yesterday. It was brown. These things are too fragile. They ought to be made of celluloid.
Then there would be a fire hazard. The sergeant major looked up. He examined Graber's decorations and then grinned.
That's right. Nevertheless, I have no uniform for you. Sorry. They're all worse than yours.
He glanced at Graber piercingly with the blue eye. The brown one had grown duller. Graber laid a package of Binding's cigarettes on the table. The sergeant major swept them with a glance from the brown eye, turned around, and came back with a blouse.
This is all I have.
Graber did not touch the blouse. He took out of his pocket a small bottle of cognac, which he had brought with him as a precaution, and placed it beside the cigarettes. The sergeant major disappeared and then returned with a better blouse and an almost new pair of trousers. Graber reached for the trousers first. His own were much mended. He turned them over and noticed that the commissary watchdog had folded them so that a spot as big as a man's hand had been hidden. Graber looked at the spot in silence, and then at the cognac.
It's not blood, the sergeant said. It's the best grade of olive oil. The man who wore them came from Italy. A little benzene and the spot will be gone.
If it's so easy, why did he trade them and not clean them himself? The sergeant showed his teeth.
A good question. But the man wanted to have a uniform that smelled of the front, something like the one you're wearing. spent 2 years sitting in an office in Milan and writing letters from the front to his fiancée. Couldn't go home in new trousers that had only a dish of salad spilled on them. It's my best pair, really.
Graber did not believe him, but he had nothing more with him to improve the trade. Nevertheless, he shook his head.
Well then, said the sergeant major, another proposition. You don't need to trade them. Keep your old rags, too. That way you'll have a dress uniform. Agreed?
Don't you need the old ones to make the count come out? The sergeant gave a careless gesture. His blue eye caught a beam of sunlight that shot dustily through the window.
The count hasn't come out for a long time. What does come out anymore, after all? Do you know?
No.
Well then, said the sergeant major.
He was passing the city hospital and stopped. Mutzig popped into his mind. He'd promised to visit him. For a moment he hesitated, but then went in. He suddenly had the superstitious feeling again that he could bribe fate by doing a good deed. The amputees were on the second floor. The ground floor of the hospital was assigned to the serious cases and those recently operated on, who were still confined to bed. Thus, they could be more quickly moved to the cellar during an air raid. The amputees were not considered helpless, and so they had been placed higher up. During an alarm, they could come to each other's assistance. A legless man could, if necessary, always put his arms around the necks of two armless amputees and get to the cellar between them, while the personnel were rescuing the serious bed cases.
You, Mutzig said to Graber. I never thought you would come.
Neither did I, but you see I'm here.
That's nice of you, Ernst.
Stockmann is here too. Weren't you with him in Africa?
Yes.
Stockmann had lost his right arm. He was playing Scott with two other cripples.
Man alive, Ernst, he said. What's happened to you?
His eyes slid inquiringly over Graber. He was instinctively looking for the wound.
Nothing,
Graber replied. They all looked at him. They all had the same expression as Stockmann.
Furlough, he said in embarrassment.
He felt almost guilty at being whole.
I thought you got enough in Africa for a permanent pass home.
They patched me up and then sent me to Russia.
You were in luck there.
I was too, relatively speaking. The others all became prisoners of war. They couldn't fly any more out.
Stockmann waved his stump.
If one can call this luck.
The man in the middle slapped his cards down on the table.
Are we playing or are we jawing?
He asked rudely. Graber saw that he had no legs. They had been amputated very high up. Two fingers were missing from his right hand and he had no eyelashes. The lids were new and red and gleaming, and looked as if they had been burned.
Go on playing, Graber said. I have time.
Just this one hand,
Stockmann announced.
We'll be through soon.
Graber seated himself beside Mutzig at the window. Don't pay any attention to Arnold, Mutzig whispered. He's having his bad day.
Is he the one in the middle?
Yes. His wife was here yesterday. After that, he always has a couple of bad days.
What are you gossiping about there? Arnold shouted.
We're gossiping about old times. There's no law against that, is there?
Arnold growled something and went on playing.
Usually it's very pleasant here, Mutzig said eagerly.
We really have a lot of fun. Arnold was a Mason. That's not simple, you know. And his wife is cheating on him. His mother told him that.
Stockmann threw his cards on the table.
Damn the luck! The solo cross was a sure thing. How was anyone to know the three knaves would be sitting in one hand?
Arnold bleated something and shuffled again.
Sometimes one doesn't know which is better when you want to get married, Mutzig said. To have lost an arm or a leg?
Stockmann says an arm, but how can you hold a woman in bed with one arm? And you do have to hold them, don't you?
That's not important. The main thing is that you are alive.
That's true, but you can't support yourself with that all your life. After the war, those things are different. Then you're not a hero anymore. You're just a cripple.
I don't think so. They have wonderful prostheses.
That's not what I mean, Mutzig said.
I don't mean work. We have to win the war. That's what we have to do, Arnold suddenly announced in a loud voice. He had been listening. Let others risk their bones for a change. We have done our part.
He shot an unfriendly glance at Graber.
If all the slackers were out there, we wouldn't have to keep withdrawing all the time.
Graber did not reply. You could not quarrel with amputees. Anyone who had a lost limb was always in the right. You could quarrel with someone who had been shot through the lungs or had a shell splinter in his stomach and might be in even worse shape. But it was strange. Not with an amputee. Arnold went on playing.
What's your opinion, Ernst? Wutzig asked after a while. I have a girl in Munster. We still correspond. She thinks I have been shot in the leg. I have not written her about this yet.
Wait. And be glad you don't have to go back anymore.
I am, Ernst. But you can't keep on being glad indefinitely.
You make me sick,
one of the kibitzers sitting around the card players said suddenly to Mutzig.
Get drunk and be men.
Stockmann laughed.
What are you laughing about? Arnold asked.
I just thought how it would be if a heavy bomb slammed down on us tonight, right on top of us so that there was nothing left but jelly. Then why would we have tormented ourselves with all these worries?
Graber got up. He saw that the kibitzer had lost both feet.
A mine, or frozen, he thought automatically.
What's become of our anti-aircraft guns? Arnold growled at him. Do you need them all out there? There are practically none here anymore.
Nor outside either.
What?
Graber realized he had made a mistake.
Outside we are waiting for the new secret weapons, he said. They're said to be real wonders.
Arnold stared at him.
Damn it all. What sort of way is that to talk? That sounds as if we had lost the war. That's impossible. Do you think I want to sit on a pushcart and sell matches like the men after the first war? We have rights. The Führer has promised.
He slammed his cards down on the table in excitement.
Come, turn the radio on,
the kibitzer said to Mutzig.
Music!
Mutzig turned the knob. A flood of brassy words poured out of the loudspeaker. He turned the dial.
Leave it on,
Arnold demanded angrily.
Why? It's only another of those speeches.
Leave it on, I say! That's a party oration. If everyone would only listen to them regularly, things would be better with us.
Mutzig sighed and turned the dial back. A Sieg Heil orator screamed into the room. Arnold listened with clenched jaws. Stockmann made a sign to Graber and shrugged his shoulders. Graber went over to him.
Take care of yourself, Stockmann, he whispered. I've got to go.
Something better to do, eh?
It's not that, but I have to be off.
He walked out. The glances of the others followed him. It seemed to him that he was naked. He walked slowly through the room. He believed that would be less offensive to the amputees, but he saw how they looked after him. Mutzig hobbled with him to the door.
Come again,
he said in the faded light of the gray corridor.
Today you had bad luck. Usually we're much gayer.
Graber stepped out into the street. It was growing dark now, and all of a sudden his fear for Elizabeth came upon him again. All day he had tried to escape from it. But now, in the uncertain light, it seemed to creep upon him once more out of every corner. He went to Polman. The old man opened the door at once. It was as though he had been expecting someone else.
It's you, Graber, he said.
Yes, I won't bother you for long. I just wanted to ask you something.
Polman opened the door.
Come in. It is better not to stand outside. No need for people to know.
They went into the room where the lamp stood. Graber smelled fresh cigarette smoke. Polman did not have a cigarette in his hand.
What did you want to ask me, Graber?
Graber looked around.
Is this all the room you have?
He asked.
Why?
I might want to hide someone for a few days. Is that possible here?
Polman was silent.
It's not anyone who is wanted, Graber said. I would only do it as a precaution. Very likely it won't be necessary at all. I am anxious about someone. Perhaps it is only imagination.
Why do you come to me for that?
I don't know anyone else. Graeber did not know himself why he had come. He had simply felt that he had to look for a hideaway in case worst came to worst.
Who is it?
Someone I want to marry. Her father is in the concentration camp. I'm afraid that she may be taken too. She hasn't done anything. Perhaps I'm just imagining all this.
Nothing is imagination in these times, Pullman said. And precaution is better than regret. You can have this room if you need it.
Graeber felt a wave of warmth and relief. Thank you, he said. Thank you very much. Pullman smiled. Suddenly he looked less frail than before. Thank you, Graeber said once more. I hope I won't need it. They were standing in front of the shelves of books.
Take any of them you want, Pullman said. Sometimes they help you get through an evening.
Graeber shook his head.
They don't help me. But there's one thing I'd like to know. How does all this fit together? These books, these poems, these philosophies, with the inhumanity of the SA, the concentration camps, and the liquidation of innocent people.
They don't fit together. They simply exist at the same time. If the men who wrote these books were alive, most of them would be sitting in a concentration camp, too.
Perhaps.
Pullman looked at Graeber.
You intend to get married?
Yes. The old man pulled a volume from a shelf.
I can't give you anything else. Take this. It's nothing to read. It's pictures, just pictures. There have been times when I was not able to read and spent whole evenings just looking at pictures. Pictures and poems. They always helped as long as I had oil for the lamp. Later, in the dark, of course, there was only prayer left.
Yes,
Graeber said without conviction.
I've thought a great deal about you, and I've thought about what you said to me recently. There's no answer.
Pullman hesitated and then said softly,
Only one. You must believe. What else remains?
Believe in what?
In God and in what's good in men?
Haven't you ever doubted that?
Graeber asked.
Of course, the old man replied. Often. How else could I believe?
Graeber went to the factory. It had grown windy, and torn fragments of cloud drifted low over the roofs. A company of soldiers was marching across the square in the half-darkness. They were carrying packages and were on their way to the station and to the front.
I might be one of them, he thought.
He saw the linden tree looming darkly in front of the demolished house, and suddenly he felt in his shoulders and his muscles the same strong surge of life he had experienced the first time he had seen the tree.
Strange, he thought. I feel sorry for Pullman, and he cannot help me. But every time I go see him, I feel life deeper and closer than usual.